The scripture reading for this morning is from Genesis 16, verses 1 through 16. Normally, when you go to the Old Testament, you find it to be somewhat dull and boring. This particular passage, if you listen to it closely, there is a degree of melodrama and raciness to it that maybe some of our Hollywood writers and television producers might have spawned their ideas from time to time. Particularly would draw your attention maybe to the last sentence when I get there of this particular passage. I found it most interesting and somewhat enlightening. Genesis 16, 1 through 16. And by the way, because of this passage, I hope it overshadows my inability to pronounce the proper nouns. Now Sarai, Abram's wife, bore him no children. She had an Egyptian slave girl whose name was Hagar. And Sarai said to Abram, "You see that the Lord has prevented me from bearing children. Go into my slave girl. It may be that I shall obtain children by her." And Abram listened to the voice of Sarai. So after Abram had lived 10 years in the land of Canaan, Sarai, Abram's wife, took Hagar, the Egyptian, her slave girl, and gave her to her husband, Abram, as a wife. He went into Hagar, and she conceived. And when she saw that she had conceived, she looked with contempt at her mistress. Then Sarai said to Abram, "May the wrong done to me be on you. I gave my slave girl to your embrace. And when she saw that she had conceived, she looked on me with contempt. May the Lord judge between you and me." But Abram said to Sarai, "Your slave girl is your power. Do unto her as you please." Then Sarai dealt harshly with her, and Hagar ran away from her. The angel of the Lord found her by a spring of water in the wilderness, the spring on the way to Sur. And she said, "Hagar, slave girl of Sarai, where have you come from and where are you going?" She said, "I'm running away from my mistress Sarai." The angel of the Lord said to her, "Return to your mistress and submit to her." The angel of the Lord also said to her, "I will so greatly multiply your offspring that they cannot be counted for the multitude." And the angel of the Lord said to her, "Now you have conceived and shall bear a son. You shall call him Ishmael, for the Lord has given heed to your affliction. He shall be as wild as an ass of man, with his hand against everyone and everyone's hand against him. And she shall live at odds with all of his kin." So she named the Lord who spoke to her. "You are Elroy," she said. "Have I really seen God and remained alive after seeing him?" Therefore the well was called Beer-el-Roy and lies between Kadesh and Bered. Hagar bore Arab a son. And the son was named Ishmael. Abram was 86 years old when Hagar was born. Hagar bore him Ishmael. So ends the reading.
Well, here goes. I brought a clock, Carol. And I think we're going to running on pretty good. 5 after 11. So here I am, and I don't think we've lost too many yet. Well, have any of you been out of your comfort zone? Well, Kelly, my daughter, makes it her mission for me. When she was 15 years old, she was determined to be a Rotary student, an exchange student, and went halfway around the world to Thailand. She couldn't pick a country nearby. And then in college, she had to learn Arabic, and she had to study in Morocco for 9 months. Morocco is a country in northern Africa. It borders on the Atlantic Ocean and the Mediterranean Sea. Its population is around 33 million. Its currency is the dirham. Its climate is very diverse, but generally it's a tropical climate. Of course, it has a Sahara there, too. They speak Arabic and French, and the religion is Islam. It's a Muslim country. Made me nervous. Soon Kelly asked me to come and visit. We planned it at the time when she was leaving the country after 9 months, and then I was going to come and pick her up, and then we were going to take another vacation. I was very apprehensive about it. It was my first time out of the country here, for my first time visiting anywhere. It was intimidating to me. It was after 9/11, and I had my doubts about lots of things. But my daughter wanted me to come. My daughter stretches me. She makes me change, trying to change me. I don't know if you have that in your family. Do your children make you stretch? Think about things that you don't want to think about? Or there maybe as a member in your family, it kind of irritates you a little bit because they make you think about things that you don't want to think about. Well, that's my daughter, Kelly. And it was a time in my life, 2011, when I was kind of set in my ways. I had my thoughts about who I was. I didn't want to really change. I had my thoughts about who I was. I was in a more fundamental state of mind in my church, in my values. But I decided I was going to go to this country, because my daughter was there. So I went on a plane and I got to go to Africa. And I got into, I got into customs and everybody was in these black, you know, they were sitting in the customs with their black outfits and everything, and here I was, the American, the only American coming into customs. And I was very serious and, you know, make sure, will I get through customs? Will they turn me away? But I got through, and they were very nice. And I got to the cab, and I had all my money, because I had to make sure I had all the dirham. You know, there was no American money there. And they saw me coming, and they were very nice to me, because I had an hour drive to the hotel. The hotel was in Casablanca. And you have visions of Casablanca, you know, Bogart and Ingrid Bergman and all that. But there was no Americans around. And I got in the taxi cab, and I had my hour drive. And I looked around, and what did I see? But shepherds with sheep and little old men in robes with long beards on donkeys. And I thought I entered a DeMille movie, you know, like the Ten Commandments. I was going back in time. And I thought, wow, this country's so different. And I thought, where am I? But I got to the hotel, and I drank my bottled water, and I waited for Kelly, who was going to meet me there. And when I woke up, I heard, at 5:30 in the morning, I heard the shrill horn, I thought. And what is this at 5:30 in the morning? It was the prayer horn that goes five times this horn goes. And it's so loud, and it's really eerie sounding. And it's almost like if you were hearing when they have those alarms at noon. And that was the alarm for everyone to get up and pray and turn to Mecca and pray. and they do that 5 times. And I thought, boy, these people are diligent. But it was very eerie to hear that loud noise at 5:30 in the morning. I thought, well, that's a great alarm for me to get up. And then I looked out of the hotel, and that was like a riot going on. There was all these men, and they were just screaming and yelling and carrying on. And I thought, oh, I've entered a riot zone. They're just carrying on. What is going on? I found out later, it's like if the Cubs won. They were celebrating soccer. And here I am thinking that I'm entering something terrible, but it was just a soccer thing. So this is how I am. I'm always on guard. I'm just on guard, thinking that the worst is going to happen. Well, Kelly got me, and the adventure began when we went across Morocco. That was her idea. Mom, you're going to see all of Morocco before we meet the family that I met. So I'm thinking, oh, so here I am with this huge red suitcase, and we're taking it all over. We went to the capital, which was Rabat, and we met some of her college friends, and then I introduced some of the really good things of Morocco, fresh orange juice, sweet tea. We ate food with the bowl of olives, which was wonderful, and we went to Asila, the coastal city, and then I got to go on the train ride. The train ride was terrible because it was like elbow to elbow with people standing. And that was, you know, in America, we have all this, like, comfort zone where we have this, you know, space that we have. And we're so used to that space. And then in this country, you know, you get on the train and you're, you know, close to everybody. And then you're like, oh, okay. And I'm thinking they're really rude. You're so rude. You're pushing me around. But really, that's the way they are. They don't think it's rude. It's just that you need to get room in the train. But to me, it was like, oh, you have to get away from me. But that wasn't the way it was. And here Kelly is so comfortable. She knows what it is to be in a foreign country. She knows what it is to be with other people. Not me. I'm just on my guard. So we saw some beautiful things, though. We saw the beautiful buildings and the wide, narrow passages, which I was a little uncomfortable with, and the large arched doorways. And it was really beautiful, but I was still so guarded, because then we went by these little coffee shops where all the old men were, and you didn't see the women. And they did the jeers and the stares, because they didn't have many Americans around. And all the women around were in their beautiful robes and their head coverings. And they didn't have any head covering on. And they were kind of looking at us funny. And I didn't like that. Because I didn't like being a minority. I wasn't used to it. So I had mixed feelings about our travels, mostly on guard, when seeing my daughter completely at ease and not being ruffled. She got rooms for us late at night and haggled with the innkeepers. But she was comfortable, and I wasn't. So I was really glad when we came to Meknes, the college town where she lived in, with her Muslim family. She was invited to come to live with them about 3 months in by her college friend, Fatih. Fatih's family, her father and mother and brother, Mohammed. A lot of the boys were named Muhammad, and her aunt, and they lived in an alabaster spatial apartment. It was like Arabian Nights, actually. It was pretty nice. Low couches and big rugs. Kelly had been there 6 months, and no one spoke English. But we all got along great because we spoke the language of love. This was my true turning point. They all loved Kelly. Mom and Dad loved her as a daughter. Fatih and Mohammed and her sister, they welcomed her with open arms. There was laughter and singing and dancing. They gave me special gifts they made for me. I wasn't an American in a foreign country. I was part of an extended family. You wondered why we had the reading today about Ishmael and Hagar. Well, they were part of the extended family, and that was the Islam. That's when Islam started. Father Abraham. They believe in Father Abraham, too. They're all part of an extended family. And then my eyes were opened. I wasn't afraid anymore. This is my testimonial, the beginning of my journey to tolerance. Maybe you're going to have a journey of tolerance in some other area. Maybe it's not with an Islam family. You don't see that many around here. But maybe it's in another area. Maybe it's a gay neighbor. Maybe it's a black family that just moved in. But maybe there is some time in your life that you might take a journey that's going to be eye-opening. But it's only when you can establish a relationship that it really helps to understand, to grow. And this is mine. In closing, you see on your bulletin a world. I heard they are sending up a new passenger rocket ship that will orbit the Earth, Virgin Galactic Airlines. And I'd like to have us imagine that we got a golden ticket for that passenger spaceship. And I believe all of us have a window seat. And as you look out and you saw, you'd see a stream disappearing, a mountain melting away, and the country's borders are disappearing. And all you see is the continents and a blur of water, blue water. And now you have a Star Trek moment. You are a global citizen. Thank you.